Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Living and Thriving. Living and Thriving. Living and Thriving with Rusty. Living and Thriving with Rusty.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon to all my blessed beloveds out there in Radio Land. It's Living and Thriving time, and guess what? I'm Rusty. Even bigger than that, when I roll over in bed, I do squeak. My 44th birthday, 44 years around this beautiful large sun, is tomorrow. So today, I want everybody to celebrate. What fun celebrating my birthday. And hey, celebrating your life and celebrating existence and celebrating beauty and all those things that are good, bad, ugly, and in between, because guess what? Life's chaos. Life's a roller coaster. Life is crazy. But we got this. You, me, and all the fleas, we got this dog. Let's scratch, right? That's what we're here to do. Living and Thriving with Rusty is especially designed to inspire you, create some thought in you, challenge you, motivate you, or at least make you go, Jesus, it's not just me. Because you're not alone. It doesn't matter what it is. You're not alone. There's somebody else out there going through something similar that you are going through. And God knows, I know this. And thank God, I've been able to meet so many people from all over the world who bless you with their story and their inspiration and what makes them ooey gooey on the inside, because Lord knows all we ever hear is negative this, negative that, blah, 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 blah. I don't want that in my life. I don't choose that in my life. And I know when you tune in on Thursdays, you don't choose it either. Today, I'm stupidly, crazily excited to talk to Anna Holub. Hopefully I pronounced her name right. If I didn't, she can call me Krusty for the rest of the show. She is a forgiveness and addiction teacher. Yeah, addiction and forgiveness. Boy, that is a long, long road. I know it's very difficult to get over your own addictions. We all have addictions. But forgiveness, trust, rebuilding that pipeline of feeling like that part is healed, whether it's a codependency or mother, father, daughter, whatever, you know, whatever that relationship is, whether it's your own addiction or an addiction relationship, hard to bridge that gap of forgiveness. And I'm dying to hear what Anna has to say about that because, well, she's the expert. So let's see if she's out there. Knock, knock. Hannah, are you there?
I am knock, here. Knock, knock back, Rusty. How are
yay,
you?
Yay, hi. I'm so excited to have you today because you know what? How do you really build that bridge? But before we get to that exciting part, who are you? What do you do? And what makes you get up every morning?
Well, I'm real happy to be here. And before I start any of that, I just want to say happy, happy birthday to you tomorrow. But we can
start
celebrating now. Yeah,
amen.
That's so cool. May it be a wonderful and blessed new year for you.
Amen. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. So, right. Who am I and what makes me get up in the morning? Well, how I regard myself, how I feel inside of me, who I am, is an innocent child of God, everyone else on the planet. And that helps me to relax inside. So, yes, I have a name. I have a business. It's called Clear Path to Peace, and I teach all kinds of ways of coming into inner and outer peace. And the thing that gets me up out of bed in the morning is the desire to share what I've been given so that we have a peaceful world. And it doesn't mean that I'm done at all. I'm just as human as anyone else. I'm working my stuff. However, I do feel very committed to this path and very passionate about offering some ways that I have discovered through my own life about how to do this deep inner work of forgiveness and how to look at it in a totally different way so that it's not really the traditional model that we were taught when we were kids.
It's so hard because we live in such a fear-based society to trust. And when the little bit of trust that we have given to somebody is broken like that, I just, that's a tough thing to spin. It's a tough thing to weave back together. What was your first experience with addiction, and how did you figure out the forgiveness piece? I mean, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, well, you know, I've written a book. It's called Forgive and Be Free, and in it there is my story, which I'll give you, you know, a brief rundown on right now. And so when I got into the forgiveness work, I wasn't really focused on addictions at that time. It was only later that I realized that just about everyone that I knew, including myself, had or suffers with currently repeating negative patterns in our minds. And that could be a behavior, it could include a substance, but there are many, many subtle addictions as well. And I started to look at it as a really, really much bigger way of walking through the world, wanting to be not in an addiction, but in a recovery. And because I had already really delved into the forgiveness work, I realized, oh, these two things go together, and I don't feel like people are talking about it enough. So I guess it's up to me to start talking about it. So as far as what happened for me in my life, a lot of things happened. I feel like, you know, every single one of us, we have these really tough things that happen, and they look a little different for each person. For me, it really started when I was in utero, before I ever got here, because of what was going on with my family. And my family had lost a child. And so there was a girl and a boy, and the boy died when he was 5 of a brain tumor. And the thing that my mother was told to do is to get pregnant right away. So she conceived me within 2 months of that happening. And when I got older and looked back on that situation, I realized how essential it is for us to really tune in to what was going on with our parents before we even were born. And to see, you know, maybe there were great things happening in the family, but maybe not. And I realized, oh, okay, so I was born into this pool of grief. And I came out into the world, and one of the things that I felt like was my mission was to save my mother and save the family. And I couldn't do that. So my mother got increasingly sick. She really struggled with mental illness and got increasingly dependent on me emotionally as I got older, and also on my other two sisters. But there seemed to be some kind of link that we had that she really leaned on me very heavily, and I got very, very confused. Didn't really know how to handle that too well. So by the time I was a teenager, I went from being the good girl to being the rebellious teen who kind of ran around and just tried to do whatever I could to get this heaviness off my back, which was my family's tragedy and not understanding how to really grieve properly. And I felt like it was all on me, you know, so that was super heavy. And then I moved 3,000 miles away from New Jersey to California so that I could get a fresh start when I went to college. And soon after that, my mother, her situation was getting worse and worse. And by the time I was 23, she killed herself. So at that time, I was pregnant with my first child, and I was very pregnant. I was 8.5 months pregnant. And so that was a real turning point in my life where everything fell apart. And yet, as we know from, you know, either being babies or being parents ourselves, that if a baby's coming, you can't stop it because you don't feel like having a baby. It's coming. It's nature, you know. So I had to go through with having my daughter, which was a blessing, but I was a mess. And she was also then experiencing in utero. And when she came out, another generational trauma in the family. So I lived with that and did the best I could. And it took me quite a long time to really delve into my feelings about my mom and her suicide and what I needed to do about it. I really had no idea what to do about it. All I could do was just be a good mom as much as I could to my daughter and keep going in life, which I did. Then it took me 8 years to begin to take apart some of that grief and confusion. And I had a meditation practice, and I began, I guess I was just ready, you know, about 8 years later. And I started to really take a look and explore more. But then it took another 8 years before I found the forgiveness work. So I realized, since it took that long, that it's never appropriate, nor do I ever do it, to rush anyone into forgiveness. If I needed 16 years before I was ready or I found the tools, maybe I would have been ready earlier had I known about the tools, but just trusting the process of what happened for me, I realized, okay, when we are ready, this forgiveness work is available to us, but we don't need to push or rush, or if something awful happened, I am certainly not expecting you to just the next day go, oh, no problem, because these things go very deep. And to me, this whole forgiveness process is a laying down of our burdens. It's a letting go in a deep, deep way. So we must be very aware and awake and gentle and compassionate with ourselves and with everyone else involved too, as best we can, so that we can really heal. So that gives you an idea of where I came from and why this is such a big deal for me.
Well, and I think it's very easy for us, you know, and just trying to encapsulate the whole that trauma place. You know, it's very easy for us to try to deny and replace. And obviously with what your mom was suffering, she tried to replace that suffering, and it just grew bigger and larger and more out of control. But larger than that, here's her daughter trying to deal and process with stuff that she can't fully understand because she can't fully understand herself. You know, that's part of growing up, right? And
sure,
I'm sure during your pregnancy you were a hot mess. God, I'm a hot mess and I'm not even pregnant. You know, like, whew, that's a lot. And then to look at yourself as a woman and a daughter and as an expectant mother, that's scary. At that time, I would imagine you were terrified. And then I'm sure that you had a ton of guilt. And whether it was real or not, we as a species feel guilty. What could I have done better? Should I have stayed? Those kinds of questions. So absolutely, 8 years, that doesn't sound like long enough, you know? I mean, that's a lot to process.
Yeah, well, everyone has their own trajectory of how much time we need. And a lot of that is also how much introspection we're able to give to our inner life. And I think some people are very introspective from the beginning, you know, that's just their personality. I feel like I grew into being introspective. And what I mean by that is really being willing to honestly take a look at what's going on inside. Like, why am I feeling uptight? Why am I angry at that person? Who do I think I am? And what do I think life's about? These are deep questions, and we can so easily be distract ourselves away from those things, and it could take a lot longer if we're not really taking a look. So a big part of the early stages of the forgiveness process are just simply to slow down, be in a prayerful, prayer doesn't work, then we do an intention, but be conscious about what we're doing and then really explore, not trying to skip over it. People will come and say, okay, I'm ready to forgive. Let me show me how to do it. And I just want to do it like instantaneously without really taking a look. And that will not work.
Pill.
You can't jump over this stuff. You got to really slow down. And it takes a lot of trust because when I'm working with people, I don't say, all right, you know, we're going to go back through every single detail of everything that ever happened.
Right.
Yet we do need to touch the tender spot with a lot of love. And that's why I always do a prayer first, so that there is a conscious spiritual space of love and healing to be able to do this work inside of. And that to me is essential. Yeah.
I think, you know, I think it's a very powerful thing, and I love how you really emphasize the fact that it takes time, because depending on what side of addiction you're on, it takes time to get clean from the addiction itself, and then it's unraveling everything that transpired during the addiction on top of trying to heal the wounds that were created in that process. I mean, there's a lot of layers there, though, you know?
Sure. Yeah, there are so many layers all the time. And so true that depending on what kind of addiction we're suffering with, there are things that may need to happen, like detox, like rehab. Maybe not. Maybe it's just a matter of slowly weaning ourselves from destructive behavior. We need to have a path to go on and a place to lean towards so that we feel like there's hope, for one thing, and there's a place to go for healing and support. And like you said earlier, when we have been really upset or disappointed or betrayed by a person, or so it seems that has happened, people will say, well, how can I forgive and how can I get over this if I can't trust that person? And those kinds of painful things that happen can be the trigger of, or the beginning of an addictive experience of life, because those traumas are at the bottom of it. So we need to be very, very gentle and compassionate and go down there and say, okay, well, we're not going to be able to fix the past and put it in a bow. However, we can trust life itself. We're not trying to trust a not trustworthy person. I couldn't make my mother into a healthy person if she wasn't a healthy person. I couldn't do it. I mean, I tried, but I couldn't do it.
Right.
And I had to just feel like a failure for a while, and then I buried that all really, really deeply, and then I had to pull it back out again and be very, very gentle, compassionate with myself. So it's not like I'm going to then say, oh, well, my mother actually was a healthy person. There were times when she was more healthy than other times, but she ended up killing herself. And that's a big statement to make about life. She just didn't know how to live here. Now I have understanding about that and forgiveness of the entire situation. But at the time, I didn't understand it. So those things, when we bury them, we can put the addiction on top as the layer that we, you know, oh, I can't deal with this, so let me go get high. I can't deal with this, let me go shop some more. I can't deal with this, let me go eat a bunch of ice cream, whatever it might be. The addictions just are the top layer. And so we have to be willing to say, all right, so what's underneath all of this? And where do I go for healing?
Well, and again, addiction can be anything. You know, I personally believe that we don't talk enough about TV as an addiction, or living vicariously through people like that. I think that's a huge addiction that we're suffering from. But again, it's whatever closes your mind from dealing with your current situation, right? Is that a good way to describe it?
Yeah, I would say we close our own mind, right? So taking responsibility for the fact that we can be distracted at any given moment. This this whole life is a smorgasbord of distractions. And we can go on to the buffet table and go, oh, I'd like one of those and one of those. And gee, I haven't had enough of that yet. And we can spend our entire lives looking away instead of looking towards what is it? What is really happening right now? What am I afraid of? Where am I going? What are my regrets? What are my feelings of deep lack of happiness and peace, anger, all those things? They're just not so fun to look at. I get it. It's not that fun. However, when we lay them down and say, you know what, here they are. Oh my gosh, I want to learn from them and I want to let them go. I want to lay them down and offer them to the source of my life so that I can be healed. So I don't need to walk around with this for the rest of my life. When we do that and then we experience this letting go process, it feels so good that there's no way in the world that we want to go back to more addictive behaviors. We might have to keep teaching ourselves and be in recovery for quite a while. That's okay. But when we realize, oh, you know, I could put all that energy I was putting into my addictions, be they obvious or subtle, I could put all that energy into healing. Wow. I could just turn around and put all my energy into the healing instead of the addiction. Oh, my gosh. And then we start feeling better and better and better.
Why are we so afraid of ourselves?
Well,
it's a tough question.
Yeah. I feel like we, as a species, you know, we come from the mystery, and then we come into this world and we get born into a baby body, and then we're in what I call the family soup. And for the first 6 years at least, all we can do is absorb the family soup with all the ingredients that are in there. And unless we are born into a very, very wise, together, grounded family, which I'm sure there are some, but they're kind of rare in the modern industrialized world, we learn how to be afraid of ourselves. We learn that in order to stay and stick around and be part of the family unit, we need to act in this kind of insane way. Where we're not necessarily kind to each other and where we hold on to our fears and we blame each other and project on each other. And so we learn how to do that. And that's not a problem. We just need to unlearn it. And the unlearning part is the delayering, the unlayering, which is this forgiveness process that we can learn, which is, it's not difficult. It's not hard. It does take trust and focus and willingness and honesty.
Well, and I think it also takes a sort of realism, at least in my perspective from the work that I've had to do with my own issues, to get really good, you know? Get good with yourself. You're a deliciously, beautifully, fleshy, flawed person who's trying to just understand and cooperate with your world. And sometimes it's not pretty, and sometimes life is messy, and it's not a fault per se, it's just what it is. And I think it's easier when you get good with that understanding.
Mm-hmm.
It takes away a little bit of the sting of self-pity. And it's okay to cry, and it's okay to be mad, and it's okay to swear, and it's okay to throw things as long as it doesn't hurt anybody, you know, but not wallowing in it. And that's something that we don't teach enough of, is not wallowing in it and not turning it into something that is buried. We don't talk. We don't communicate. We don't hug, you know. I remember growing up, I'm a big hugger. Like, I'm a total big hugger. And I remember growing up, and there were people who were like, you're invading my personal bubble. And to me, that was just very bizarre. Why would you have a personal bubble when somebody wants to love you? And so we've kind of broken off, I think, that piece of security because we have stuffed, that with fear. And I don't know how to change that. But my biggest thing is you just have to get good with yourself, you know? It happened. It was yesterday. There's nothing you can do about it, right?
Yeah, so like you said, we have to get good with ourselves because we can't control what other people do. And
right.
The more that I go deep into that, I realize, all right, I have my sovereign connection life with the oneness that gives me life. And that's, at the end of the day, what I am going to return when I'm done with this life. I'm going to return to the mystery with this sovereign connection. That's pretty much what I get to take with me. So I can't control anyone else, but I can, the more I, as you say, get right with myself, the more I can relax and realize that everyone is a beautiful, innocent child of God underneath all the layers. And if I can continue to see that in myself and see that in other people, then all the other projections and anger and all that, that can just be given away. It can be offered up. It can be released so that we don't have to keep it. But we need to be ready. Like I said, it took me years to be ready to work with my pain and suffering around my mom. And I needed to do a lot of emoting. You know, I love that tears are very helpful for us to cleanse. But I totally agree with you that wallowing in it and repeating our story over and over again in a way that doesn't give any room for an opening or a new understanding, that's not going to help anybody. So we just kind of get down in the muck, and then sometimes we get into an addiction of the muck itself. You know, it's like, well, let me tell you about my story again, or let me, as Russell Brand, I just listened to him a little bit ago, and he said to me about, let me show you my museum. And I thought, exactly, you know, let me show you my museum pieces. Here's my display of this and this. Oh, and let's go over here, and I'll show you my display on this and this and this. And if that's just going to be repetitive over and over again, that is an addiction in itself. Unless we decide, okay, I want to be in recovery. I don't want to keep repeating the same old every day of my life. I've had enough.
Well, and when you get stuck in your story, you haven't really quite healed there. And that's, you know, you can tell your story. Like, I think you and I can tell our stories, but we're detached from it because we've gone through that journey, and it's not something in which we wallow in. It's something that we're sharing so that others have an understanding, but it's not, you know, you're stuck in that story. And I think that's where people get confused because they think, oh, well, I can talk about it without crying. Well, yeah, but that's all you do. You know, is that the only thing that you do with your story, or do you try to create a different environment? And that's a challenge too, don't you think?
Well, I think one of the biggest challenges really is to realize how much we project upon the world. So, for instance, if for my case, you know, I was growing up with a mother who was getting progressively sick or over time in ways that I couldn't understand, that were, since it was a mental illness and not a physical one, it was that much more confusing because I couldn't say, oh, well, you know, mom has diabetes or something. And so I got more and more confused, and I started to, this I realized much later, to project on the world, oh, this must be how the world is. This must be, you know, everything must be confusing, and nothing can really help me, and no one will really show up for me, and everyone will leave me. So I had to, first of all, take responsibility for the fact that I was doing that, and then let go of the stories that I was telling myself, which were deep in there. They're habits. You know, talk about an addiction. Man, that can be a very unconscious one that just about everybody with an ego has. If we're going to be looking around and assuming, like, how many times do people assume they know all about you and what you're going through and they have no idea, but they're sure of it? Happens all the time. We're sure, oh, I know all about that. Oh, I know what this world's like. Oh, I know that person. That person's all messed up. You know, we have these judgments. When actually, if we trace those judgments back, we're going to find them right in our own mind. And that's the place that we need to heal and let go of those places that are subtly or obviously violent to ourselves and others, so that we can say, wow, I want to be peaceful and happy. I don't really want this garbage in my mind. I'm going to have to let it go.
And I think it's challenging because we get so many different ideologies as to what that means. You know, what does letting go mean? And it's very personal, mm-hmm. just like your story is very personal, I think, personally.
Mm-hmm.
No two stories are identical. No two healing processes are identical. We do. And it's all based on will and bravery in some circumstances. Like, I'm sure you had to get really brave with yourself enough to get to a place where you can detach from that moment and look at it as a human being and not as a child who wanted that, you know, Donna Smith, perfect mom image that most kids from traumatic backgrounds wish. You know, you want that perfect dad, you want that perfect mom, whatever that means. And what was that process like for you? I mean, you had to get brave, I'm sure.
Yeah, I did. And like I said, it wasn't all at once. There were many layers to really delve into and to look at. But for me, it really helped to have a meditation and a prayer practice so that I felt like I was, even though I had no idea what spirit is, I still trusted there was something. There's something that was making this whole world, or something that was making me, beyond just this human craziness that I had found myself in. And I find that if people don't have some kind of cosmology that helps them to feel like there's something more than just this physical world, then, you know, if you don't have that, it's a lot harder to let go, because we don't know. We don't think we have any help. You know, if you think, oh, this is the only thing that's going on, then it can be very, very depressing. But if we feel like, well, maybe, I'm not sure about this, but just open to the possibility that there's a lot more going on than us just simply being human beings that are born, we live, and we die, and that's it, then that opens up a whole new possibility of healing that comes from the oneness space that gives us life in the first place. So reaching to that is the thing that really helped me gain my sanity and my equilibrium.
And I have friends that don't have that in them, or they don't think they do. They don't believe in anything outside of existence. And, you know, I'm sure there are some unique ways to find something bigger than yourself, which is really what spirituality is. But I think it's very hard and confusing when our communities are broken down and we're, you know, constantly on social media and constantly on TV and constantly listening to songs that may not demonstrate or represent the best part of being human. And I guess I want to kind of sit back and ask you, with your experience and your knowledge, what are the five things that you would really recommend somebody who acknowledges that there's an issue, whatever that issue is, and wants to do something about it, but they're kind of scared and they don't feel necessarily like they have the resources? That's a big question.
Yeah. Pardon me, I'm getting over the flu, and so I'm starting to cough.
It's okay. It's going around the world, trust me.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so you asked for five things. It's going to be quiet. All right, so the first thing is get quiet. Just see if it's okay to sit and be still. I mean, so in being still, another thing that we need to do is slow down. Those two things, a lot of us don't really have much skill at being still and slowing down to get still. So those would be the first things to do. And when we do that, that means, oh, well, then we're going to be in contact with the pain that we've been distracting ourselves away from. And so, like you said, if this person is feeling afraid, I would just say that, yeah, expect to feel afraid, because the ego is a part of our mind that wants to keep us feeling separate from the rest of the world. And it doesn't want us to slow down and tune in. So it's going to say, oh, let's get afraid. Let's not do this. So the third thing then is to be willing to override feelings of fear. Now, it doesn't mean we have to do anything that's amazingly brave, like go lead the troops to war or whatever. All we're doing is we're staying with our breath and letting ourselves feel fear so that we can feel life. We can feel all of ourselves so that we can really tap in and tune in. So it's going to take, like you said, some courage, some bravery. But we all have this. We all have the inner strength. So we get to the number four, which is trust. If we're going to be able to sit through a wave of fear by slowing down and tuning in and being still, then we're going to need to come up with some trust. And the way that I do that sometimes, if I don't know what to do, is to treat it like an experiment. Just say, you know what, I'm just going to experiment right now for the next 5 minutes. That's all I got to do. Just experiment for 5 minutes and treat it like just with a lot of curiosity. I don't know what's going to come up, but let me just see. Let me be an explorer. Way of feeling like, all right, I don't know what's going to come up, but I already know that I'm really good at being miserable. And I don't really want to repeat that pattern over and over for the rest of my life because I'm so sick of it. So if we just get sick of it enough, or we get bored with our situation enough, we'll say, all right, I would prefer just for the next 5 minutes, it's going to be an experiment in curiosity. Let me just see. So those things are good ways to start a practice. And then, like I said before, we don't have to have a religion at all. In fact, sometimes a dogmatic religion can really get in the way of being open to what spirit has in this moment right now, right here, right now for us. So trusting that there is a goodness that creates us in every moment with every breath, that's perhaps the biggest stretch of all. And yet that's the ticket out of our misery. So that was at least five things.
That was actually very good. I'm very impressed. That was good.
Mm.
So this is a great time.
This is like, this is what I do, right? This is what I do inside of myself, and this is what I teach people to do. So thanks for asking.
You're welcome. So this is a great place for people to find out where they can find out more information about you or to connect with you, ask questions, sign up for some of your classes, get your book.
Right. Yeah, sure. Well, I have a really wonderful online course that is called Addiction Recovery and Complete Healing. And if you want to know about that, you can go to clearpathtopeace.com. clearpathtopeace.com, all one word, and that will give you all the information about the course and some free downloads and things like that, so you can get started on the addiction and forgiveness piece. If the addiction thing isn't really quite your thing and you just are really interested in the forgiveness part, then just go to my website, which is anahaolub.com, A-N-A-H-O-L-U-B.com. And all the rest of the stuff, including my book, there's a CD, there's some free downloads, there's other courses that I've done. And I'm also, I work with people one-on-one. And so I would love to talk to you if you feel like you really want to help, have me help you through the process, so you can feel it directly for yourself.
I was coaching a class a few years ago, and this is how I realized that I had to really get good with myself. Throughout trauma and abuse, I became very gifted with compartmentalizing. So I was an excellent business person. I could have a conversation absolutely with you about business, constructing your business, you know, that whatever, just very detached from my person and my personal life. And I was coaching, and I was so excited. It was like my 14th coaching job and blah, 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 right? Just young and spicy and saucy and ready and glowing. And in the middle of my class, this woman stood up, and she had tears in her eyes, and she was fuming. She was so furious. And she looked at me and she said, "How the fuck can you coach me when you haven't gone through anything in your life?" Turned around and walked out the door. And I just sat there and I'm like, what do you mean I haven't gone through anything in my life? And that was really powerful for me because I had never actually expressed or talked about the abuse or, you know, living on the streets or being shot at or my abusive marriage or any of that stuff that just was compartmentalized, tightly sealed away to deal with when I wasn't with my class. And so I stopped teaching for about a year because I had to really mull and chew over that whole process. You know, do I come out of this shell? Do I open those jars? I actually wrote a book, Having Tea with My Skeletons, where I pull each one of those traumas out and sit down and really describe them and deal and process. Or do I just leave my jars on the shelf and go about not doing what I'm passionate about? And that was really a metamorphosis, one of my first transitions into what I do now. But for me, it was very difficult. What visuals can you give somebody who may have experienced the kind of traumas that you've dealt with in order to get really good with those places and feel comfortable with talking about their story? Because I think a lot of us don't really want anybody to know because we're just not ready.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for bringing that up and telling that part of your story, because for quite a while, I was doing this forgiveness work, and I was not talking about my mom. And Sierra kept saying, you know, people need to know how you got into this work. And I would think, well, but that would be not, it would be disrespectful to her memory to keep pulling it out. I can't do that. And then I realized, no, I do need to do that. I do need to do that. And I felt like I had her permission, actually, from the other side, and some really cool things had happened. So anyway, I can totally understand that we could be, for various reasons, hesitant to tell our story. And it's okay. I mean, your life story is perfect the way it is. And it has so many ingredients for you to help you to wake up, to be your beautiful, alive, gorgeous self. And yeah, it doesn't mean that it was fun to go through all the things that were very, very tough. But you said, what do I visualize? And I will say that I visualize light. I use a lot of visualizing light for myself. And I also make decisions not to bring my energy down. You were mentioning earlier about lyrics for songs. You know, I don't go in, I just don't go to places that have really low, dense energy unless I'm being called there by spirit to serve, and then I'll do it. No problem.
Right.
Like I worked at San Quentin Prison for over 6 years, not full time, but regularly I was there. So I was walking in and out of that place and got a lot out of it, learned a lot from the guys. So it's, I'm not saying, ew, don't touch that. You know, I'm just saying dip in, but only if it is of service, your mind. So the more that we make decisions like that, clean up our diet, clean up our friendships, stop gossiping, those kinds of things, take the poison out, and then focus on the light, on the beauty, on the colors of nature. You know, we have to make these choices inside of ourselves so that we can expand and give the love that we are to the world. The world needs us right now. It's not time to just sit around. It's time to be alive and awake and give our talents and gifts that have been given to us, to everyone, no matter who they are or what they're going through.
I love the fact that we spend the majority of our life, and think about this, it's a big pill to swallow, but we actually spend the majority of our life trying to get back to being 3 years old. And I mean that in a gentle way and an exciting way, because when you're three, you're picking your nose and you're swirling and everything's beautiful and hugs are wonderful and, oh my God, the moon is great and the sun is, oh, this big orange thing, is it going to burn me? Oh, wow, it's so huge. And we have this curiosity and this delightfulness and this deliciousness. And then over the years, it just kind of gets put in a little box and put somewhere in our body that we forget about. And it's like going to, you know, like your grandparents die and you go through their attic and you find all these pictures of 1930s when they first got married and fell in love. It's like that kind of delightfulness, you know, re-experiencing what is, but in our mind we say was.
Right. So this innocence of who we are as we are created in every moment with every breath, it's totally new. Totally new. This moment right here, right now, is new. And we can't really experience the newness unless we lay down all that other stuff that we're dragging around from the past. We have to take responsibility for who's doing that. Well, I'm doing it for me until I stop, and you're doing it for you, whoever's listening, until you stop. And actually, when we really, really, really get that, then we can start to respect ourselves because we start making some other different choices. One other thing I wanted to add, too, that about this world and how crazy it is, I came to realize, and I need to remind myself, you know, all the time, that this world is a duality planet. We're on a duality planet, meaning that there's up and there's down, and there's good and there's bad, and there's day and there's night. And it seems like everything, if you look at it very deeply in the physical world anyway, it shows up in these facets of at least two and sometimes many. So when there is available to us, we have to go past duality into a unity, into a oneness. And that's not that easy to do because the world keeps showing up being duality over and over again. But then I realized, oh, one of my major problems was that I kept fighting the duality. I kept thinking, no, but I want the good stuff and not the bad stuff. But I want this, but not that. But I want to be young, but not old. No, I want to be old, but not young. Blah, blah, blah. And every time I just chose one of the dualities and I wanted that and I didn't want the other one, I was messing with myself. I was bringing myself down because it's frustrating and it's not going to change. So when I realized, oh, it's just a duality planet. This is how it is here for a while I'm a human being here. This isn't the only thing that's going on. But I could just relax and find the oneness inside of myself, inside of my breath, inside of my life itself. Then the duality can do what it does. instead of me fighting against it. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And I love the perspective. And, you know, we hear it in different ways. And as I always say, you don't know what you don't know until you know. And you don't hear what you don't hear because you're not ready to hear it. And so we've heard many things like, you know, be one with nature. You have two ears so you, and one mouth, so you hear more, talk less. We hear the same ideology in many different ways, and yet I think we still distract ourselves from tuning into that channel and saying, okay, well, shit's going to happen, but right now at this moment, I'm having a good time. I'm really enjoying my time with you and the world and the sun and all the lizards that are crawling across my screen because I live in the tropics, and just being good with that instead of tomorrow or yesterday. And it's hard. We really struggle, like kicking and screaming sometimes, because we don't want to deal with the bad stuff. We just want to have that big cosmic orgasm all the time. But in order to really appreciate that cosmic orgasm, you have to accept and understand and learn from the times when you're not in the big O, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And realize that that is the big O, the whole darn thing, the entire dream.
Cacophony of
what you're doing here.
Yeah. It's wild.
It is a dream. It is a dream that we're in. We live beyond this dream. We come from the mystery. We're only here very temporarily. And we're not these bodies. We can use them and appreciate them and keep them healthy. But eventually they're going to go, and we're going to go back to the mystery. So what was the point of being here? I think we really need to ask ourselves this question. What is the point of being here? Because it's only
compassion.
A temporary ride.
I think for me, it was to, you know, with all of the cosmic 2x4s I've received in my life, it was really to teach me to be compassionate towards others, to understand and respect the way it is. And I honestly believe that we're here to learn something, and we're here to do something, whatever that means. You know, and those who do, do, and those who don't. But I truly believe when you tap in and you tune into the reality of who you are, even if it's a moment-to-moment thing, because life is chaos and a roller coaster, and sometimes we white-knuckle the roller coaster, and sometimes we let go and say, woo, I'm good, just let's do this. But when we get good with that, we have a chore to do or a responsibility to share that, I think.
Yeah. And to extend the love. To me, if somebody said, well, what are you doing here on planet Earth as calling yourself Anahalab with a female body on for however long I get to live here, I would say, well, I've received so much love. I want to share it.
And then that's basically what we're supposed to be doing.
Things
helping other
really
people get to the next level.
While.
They really do. It's kind of nice. It's like, this coffee is really good.
Yeah, simplicity is excellent. I'm into it. And
exactly.
I also, I study a book called A Course in Miracles. And so it's really helped me a lot to understand. You know, it's not a religion, but it's a way of understanding spirituality that works for me. It doesn't work for everybody, but it works for me. And I would just encourage everyone to find something that links you with spirit. It could be a philosophy or a book. It could be being out in nature. It could be learning to meditate. It could be getting into a service project, but something that helps you to link up to that which gives you life itself, to go for life itself rather than whether the duality planet is going to work out for you moment to moment or not. Because sometimes it will seem like it is working great, and other times everything will crash, and then it will change again. So if we want a constant, we have to look for life itself.
And I've taken to this whole new attitude about, you know, the chaos that happens in life. And I really think it's the universe playing games. Like, the universe is a jokester, not a schmuck, like we want to say. You know, my tire blew. It's all your fault. Damn it. Bad luck. Murphy's hit me seven times. You know, all of these things that we were raised with believing. But I just think the universe is mischievous and naughty. And, you know, like this little two-year-old who's like, neener, neener, I stole your nose, and runs away. And you're like, no, I want my nose back, man. and if you look at things, for a great example, I'm on a game show called Funky Thinkers, and I'm one of the semifinalists. And, you know, half an hour in, and the show's taped once, and it's done. And, you know, this is important because I want to be the finalist. My ego's just craving to be the funkiest thinker, you know? And, like, I turn on my camera, and my camera doesn't work. And I'm going, are you serious? This is not the time for this. But then I realize that the universe is playing with me. It's playing games. You know, this is a great computer. I know how to function it. I don't have enough time to do what I need to do to get the camera to work. So they're just going to hear my voice, and I'm going to have fun with that. Most people would take that as, I can't. Yeah, you have to roll with it. And that's very difficult because I don't think we're trained to roll with it. And in about a minute, I want you to talk about the best ways to roll with it.
Oh, so you mean within a minute right now?
You have about a minute because we're down to two.
Right. Okay, great. So the best way to roll with it, I think, is to have a sense of humor. And I told you my story about how I was incarnated into a pool of grief. And one of the things that I have really needed to do is reclaim my own sense of humor. Like, what do I think is funny? I crack myself up all the time, just even listening to my own thoughts and talking to God. And if you can remember that there's a whole lot more to this life than just what you can see. And there's all kinds of possibilities, and some of them are really funny. It helps.
Humor is 100% the best medicine that I can ever prescribe to anybody. You're having a crappy day, go see a comedian. Go watch dogs chase after a cat or with their own tail. You know, there are so many ways to lighten that load. Highly recommend humor is my number one prescription. No doctor can argue with that unless they're grumpy and they need to laugh themselves. And I'm so glad that you came on my show. You've just inspired me and created this beautiful space in the universe where people can see and be a part of. And much love to you. We're running out of time. Bless you and thank you, and keep doing what you do because it makes us all ooey gooey on the inside.
Thank you, Rusty. Many, many blessings to you and to everyone who's listening. Bye.
Bye. You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty. And guess what? I'm Rusty, and I want you guys to go out and do something fun and funky and saucy and spicy and exciting because, well, do it for me. It's my birthday tomorrow. There's your birthday guilt trip. Go buy somebody a cup of coffee. Go sit at a playground and watch kids twirl and play and throw things at each other. Watch their innocence. Watch nature. Watch a butterfly. Listen. Breathe. Go have great sex. Go make an awesome dinner. Jam your music. Sing at the top of your lungs. Bring up your soul. That's the best prescription in the world. Until next time, know that I love you. Know that you're beautiful. And, hey, the world's great, even when it's not. Know that.
You're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty.